Now we're recording?
All right.
Now we're
cool.
recording.
There
awesome.
We go.
All right. Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Will and Dan in Studio B. We're talking about the Grateful Dead, jam bands, and all sorts of music.
And I guess we'll start off today with the big news coming out of last week. Dead & Company announces summer 2023 will be their final tour.
I feel like that's, I don't want to say it's a hoax or like a marketing scheme.
I mean,
I don't know.
I am certainly surprised that they are calling it a final tour. Mm. I mean, part of me is like, you know, they're not the kind of band to do that, but they also did those Fare Thee Well shows branding them as the last.
That is
so
true.
I don't know. It's definitely going to create a marketing frenzy. Buying tickets is going to be a nightmare.
It's going to be like $500 tickets.
I know. And just Ticketmaster is going to crash.
I know. But there'll be there'll be some good shows. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see what there is. You know, yeah. I'd love to like travel to something.
I wonder if John Mayer is going on his own tour next summer. And maybe that's why they're calling it the last. And then like the summer after they'll come back.
I really don't know. I mean, that's going to be the interesting thing, too. Like, what happens to John Mayer, like, if this really is the end of Dead & Co? Because I don't think he's done playing the music of the
he's
Dead.
He's a part of the community now. He's never going to be, and I don't want to say he's never going to be able to get away from it, but he's just always going to be associated with it.
And he's definitely, you know, been, at least I've seen it, he's being accepted by the community.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No.
Like,
hey, I will say, I did not accept him at first. I was an anti-John Mayer.
I was skeptical at first, too. When I first saw the news years ago that he was teaming up with them, like, John Mayer, like, your body's a Wonderland guy? And I saw him, I'm like, wow, he is good.
You know, I was doing some Wikipedia research during class the other day, which I would not recommend. But I didn't realize he wasn't always a Deadhead. It sounds like he kind of got into them later in life.
Yeah, I think the story was, the song Althea showed up on like his Pandora playlist or something, and then like all he listened to was the Dead at one point. It's really interesting.
I guess I have to say, Sam, my parents were not Deadheads, you know. I never had older siblings, so I kind of had to discover it for myself. So I guess me and him are kind of, I'm in no place to judge him is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, I've grown up with the music. Both my parents are Deadheads, so I was, you know, these songs, they're in my DNA. I went to my first show when I was 7.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you remember any of that? Were you too young?
I do. It was at SPAC, Saratoga Performing Arts Center, summer 2011 further. I remember a couple songs from the show. I remember they were doing Casey Jones, and like they kept repeating the chorus, but it was like speeding up the whole time because they had Joe Russo on drums at the time, and he's just a monster, and he was really driving.
What band was it actually? What combination was playing?
So Further had Bobby and Phil. Jeff Cementi was there on keys. Okay. They had this guy, John Cadlasek, as like their lead guitar guy. I think he's from Dark Star Orchestra. I'm not entirely sure. And, you know, he was okay, but he just felt like a Jerry impersonator. He sounded kind of like Jerry. Just, you know, like I said, not bad, but wasn't like bringing anything unique to it.
Yeah, I guess that's what John Mayer does. Is he kind of revitalized them.
Yeah, you know, he's giving Jerry's parts, you know, the respect they deserve, but he's bringing his own style into it and really taking it to new places. So that's what I love about it.
How many shows did you go by the time you were in, like, high school?
By the time I was in high school.
Were you in the double digits yet?
I was probably close.
Let
me think here. 3, 4. I think I was around, like, maybe, like, 10 shows or so. Actually, I think I was, at that point, going into high school, I had seen like 10 Dead & Co. and then 2 Further shows.
Okay, and then, so you got a good resume.
Yeah, I think I'm up to like 20 Dead & Co. right now.
How were those shows when you were younger? What were the crowds like?
They were interesting. Remember the first Dead & Co. show I went to was literally one of the first they ever did. Halloween, Madison Square Garden, 2015.
Okay,
remember that being a cool show. I remember the second Halloween one in 2019. That was a crazy scene.
Really?
Yeah, we were hanging outside Madison Square Garden. There were all sorts of people, like people in costumes. Like I saw one couple dressed up as John Lennon and Yoko Ono.
There you go.
There were guys in dancing bear suits. And just all sorts of funny characters. I remember there was this guy, Smitty, from Sacramento, and he was out of his mind on mushrooms. And I'm still convinced to this day that he's wandering around New York City somewhere.
That's awesome. What's it called? What was I going to say? And I'm drawing a blank. Is Phil playing with the Dead & Co? Did he ever play with
no,
the Dead & Co? No, he's
never played with Dead & Co. He's just, after Fare Thee Well, he's kind of just been doing his own thing, which makes sense. You know, he's, I think, like 82 now or
something. Really? Is he that old?
Yeah, 80, 81, 82, something in that range. But he's still playing though, and he's still playing really good bass. So.
He'll probably play for the rest of his life.
Oh yeah,
there's nothing else. How old is Bobby now? Is he pushing 80 or is he like high 70s?
Let's see. His birthday's coming up. What is he gonna be? He's born. He's gonna be 75 this year.
Okay, so he's. I don't want to say he's young, but he's younger than Phil.
Relatively speaking, he's still kind of the young one.
Okay.
I find it so funny. It's like when you look at Bobby, like, you know, in the dead, he was like, you know, he was the young guy. You
he was
know,
like the pretty boy.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, and you look at him now, it's like, how is this the same guy?
I remember one of the first moments where I really got into the Grateful Dead was I watched his documentary on Netflix. And the whole time they're showing pictures of when he's young. And I think they purposely saved his interview, like his like modern interviews until later on in the documentary. And as soon as I saw him with his big mustache and his big beard, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it's really crazy. You know, you're looking at Bobby like, wow, you've changed.
I know.
But I mean, I think a lot of deadheads, you know, I think since after Jerry died, they've gotten a lot more respect for Bobby because he's been really keeping the music alive for sure.
I was reading his Wikipedia page. I didn't realize. I think he got kicked out of the band for like a short period of time in like 1968.
Oh yeah, I remember there was something about that. I remember reading about
that. They weren't like holding their own end musically or something like that.
Yeah, because like that was when they were really starting to like push the boundaries with, you know, psychedelic rock and kind of starting to build that jam band thing finally. Well, what came out that year? Anthem of the Sun, I think. So, and they were doing all sorts of interesting things for that album.
That was the first album that got me into maybe not the first album, but one of the original albums that got me into the Dead.
Yeah, it's a cool listen. Very cool listen.
Because I was listening to like Janis Joplin over COVID, even before COVID, ooh, senior year of high school.
Love Janis Joplin.
What's it called? Jefferson Airplane, Hendrix, obviously.
Ooh, cool.
60s rock, and then you discover Anthem of the Sun,
mm-hmm,
and just the artwork, the sound. Yeah. It's quite an experience.
It's a fun listen. A lot of, you know, a lot of really interesting things going on there. I remember reading about the production of the album. I forget if like their producer quit or something because they wanted to take recordings of silence from the desert and the city to create like this thick air on the album.
That's crazy.
I don't think they ever did it, but I saw that and I'm like, that sounds interesting.
What's it called? What's the first song off that album? Like the 20-minute long one.
Oh, they do the full
the other one. I think listening to that jam in 1969, just any recording of that song from them. Arguably my favorite Dead song, just
it's,
in terms of,
I mean,
like,
it's so good, like that, you know, when they were doing the whole other one, sweet, late 60s, early 70s. I remember one night I was listening to one thing. It was like this, it was like a 25-minute, you know, full other one, sweet, but then they went into Deal right after.
Really?
Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool.
That's what's it called. Deal is my favorite solo Jerry Garcia song.
I love Deal. Like, my band, the Waterboys, like, for us, like, that's our go-to song. Like, even on our worst nights, we always play that song good.
That's
such a good jam.
The only Grateful Dead or Jerry Garcia song that I could almost learn to play on guitar. I'm embarrassed to say I'm not a musician. I admire music from the distance, but it's a fun little chord progression.
Yeah, it's a really fun one to jam on. Mm. And just, there's so many good versions. Like, I love the Jerry Garcia band version because they would always, that's like, you know, the fast one. It would just be so good.
Definitely. What's it called? And the song holds up too. It's like, you know, they played it for the rest of their
Oh yeah, I mean, they're playing it for 50 years now. What, that come out 72? Like when I saw Dead and Co at City Field, the tour closer, they did Deal as an encore. And that whole show, it felt like it was going to be Billy's last show, just looking at the set list. Like, I'll pull it up here, but
go for it. Show was it again? It was
this was City Field. What was the date of it? July 15th or 16th, something like that. But it's just, you know, you're looking at the set list and, you know, you're hearing it. It's like, it really did feel like the last. It was, you know, kind of like, you know, good old Grateful Dead stuff, playing in the band, Uncle John's band. That opened the show. That was the opening tandem of it. Oh, it was great, though. They were locked in that night. But, like, they did the full St. Stephen the 11th. It really felt like it was going to be... it was Billy's last.
Really?
Yeah, you got the air of it. So that's why I was kind of surprised that, you know, when they announced the tour as like the final one, because I figured they were gonna keep it going but have Jay Lane on drums. So I guess, I don't know, I guess their thought probably was, we'll do like one last tour with Billy, because I really don't see I really don't see him doing anything after this last tour.
Why, I think he's just too old?
I don't know. He's been having... Well, he was, like, plagued with health problems the whole tour. Like, he missed a bunch of shows. He's getting up there. Yeah, he's older than Bobby. I don't know if he's... What's he, 76 or 77? I don't know. I know Mickey is 78, but he's...
Okay.
He's up there doing his thing.
I was going to say, he's loving it still.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, he brought Planet Drum back, so we'll see what happens with that, but... This is probably going to be the last outing for Billy, just from what it's looking like.
You're seeing is it a Bobby show this weekend?
Yeah, Bob Weir and the Wolf Brothers in Waterbury tour opener.
Ooh, okay.
So
they're going to be fresh and ready to go.
Yeah, it should be interesting. You know, they got a really cool lineup. I'm excited to see what they play. It should be good.
What venue are they playing at?
It's this place, the Palace Theater.
Okay.
So it's in Waterbury. There's a Dick's Pick show. It might be like Volume 8 or something. That's from like from Palace Theater, September 1972.
Really?
Here we are 50 years later.
There you go. What's it called? One of my favorite Dick's Picks. I don't know if it's Dick's Picks or if it's one of those other just live recordings. It's from the Xfinity Theater from right here, from a couple towns over in Hartford. It's a pretty good set. There's Good Bertha recording in there.
Cool. I always love a Good Bertha. That's such a fun one to open a show with. Just you can tell when the band's having fun doing that.
Oh, definitely. What's it called? Like I said, the Skull and Roses Bertha recording.
Oh, it's
probably one of my favorite songs.
So much great
of all
energy.
Time.
So much great energy on there.
That whole album has great energy. You gotta love it.
Sure. That 71 had a really interesting energy to it. You know. Because, like, you know, it was a stripped-down sound, you know, basically two guitars, drums, and bass. It was really cool. Very unique.
I like the stripped-down sound, kind of the minimalist.
Yeah.
The minimalist vibe.
Exactly. You know, it was kind of like halfway between, you know, kind of like the primal dead of, like, 1969, 1968, and then kind of the direction they would go in 72.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to listen to.
For sure. What's it called? What's the album after Anthem of the Sun?
Oh, Oxymoxowa.
You can pronounce it. I've never been able to pronounce
it. Not many can even. I don't know if I'm doing it right, but that's at least how I think it's pronounced. So
yeah, that's an interesting listen.
This is very interesting.
It took me a while to get into it, and I still I won't call it one of my favorite albums. One of my favorite Dead albums. I like Saint Stephen.
Yeah, Saint Stephen. You know, there's so many good live versions of that, and especially the way Dead & Co. does Saint Stephen now. It's so good. And plus, you know. When they've been doing with like the full like William Tell Bridge and the 11. I remember I was at the first show where Dead & Co did the full suite of that.
Really?
Yeah, City Fields 2018. It was in the second set they had just done Help Slip Franklin's, an absolute monster version of it. Then do this big Saint Stephen. And then they go into the William Tell Bridge. I'm like, whoa, am I hearing this right? And everyone around is like, oh my God, it's happening. And it's just so good.
That's crazy. I think we might have talked about this before, but what is your favorite Dead & Co or just any variation? Ooh. Favorite live show you've ever seen?
Favorite live show
I've ever
seen.
In terms of music, musically, in terms of the crowd.
There's a lot in mind. I'll narrow it down. I want to narrow it down to three, but there is a fourth one I want to bring in here. Here's what I'll bring it down to. First up, the St. Stephen night in 2018 at City Field. That, I think the second set was like Help Slip Franklin's, St. Stephen, William Tell 11, Drum Space, Eyes of the World, Stella Blue, Sunshine Daydream. It was so good.
Okay.
Probably one of the best sets I've ever seen. Then a couple weeks later, I saw them at Dodger Stadium, and that was a fun show. The vibe there was great. The band was playing awesome, you know, doing kind of, you know, a lot of those like 71, 72 songs.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Halloween 2019, that was the energy there that night because that was the first show after Robert Hunter died.
Oh, okay.
So I remember Eyes of the World that night being absolutely electric. Terrapin Station was really good too. But there were a lot of good songs, and then I saw him at Hershey Park Stadium last summer.
Is that in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Is that, okay.
Yeah, right outside Hershey Park.
Okay.
So that was like Yeah, August 2021. And that was the first show that my family and I had seen since COVID.
And
they come out, you know, doing Music Never Stopped, and we're like, we are back.
Nice.
But let me pull up that second set list, because this was nuts. I mean, it was one of the funnest sets and just overall played great. Let me see here. I know the songs. I just want to get the order right for this. Okay, here we go. This set two, this sequence, this pre-drub sequence, Here Comes Sunshine, Estimated Profit,
Ooh.
Eyes of the World, Althea.
Nice.
And that was Althea. All before drums. And they come out of space with Going Down the Road Feeling Bad,
Ooh.
And then Death Don't Have No Mercy.
Nice.
Because they had busted that out that tour. I was like, wow. But even that first set, like Cassidy, I remember was really good. It was a lot of fun.
That's crazy. How many people are going to these shows nowadays?
There's a lot, man. They got a good following, you know. People are just trying to see them as much as they can.
Exactly. Especially now,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be gone.
I know. I mean, Bobby will die on stage.
Definitely. 100%.
He's going to play till he drops.
He'll have a heart attack or something in
something.
The middle of a jam or who knows.
Exactly.
I'm sure John Mayer brings his own little crowd too.
Yeah, it's interesting you see that too. You see like Mayer fans who you know are like listening to the Dead more. Like I know some musicians from back home who are like big Mayer fans. Who I've jammed for a couple of years, but you know, I've put them on a lot of Dead stuff.
Mm.
So it's really cool seeing that too.
Mayer's from Connecticut too, isn't he?
Yeah, he's
from
Fairfield.
Yeah.
There's a couple of, I know a couple of folks who graduated from the same high school that
really?
Mayer went to.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What was it, Fairfield? Off the top of your head?
Because
there's a couple schools.
I think it might have been Fairfield Ward or
Ward,
something.
Okay. I didn't run against them in cross country, but I know of them.
Nice.
It's an intimidating school.
Yeah?
For sure.
But yeah, they were, and it's funny because there's one song, there's this Mayer song, I think it's like No Such Thing.
Mm.
He's like, I want to run down the halls of my high school. And I was like listening to that with some of those folks who went there the other night, and we just all look at each other and just start laughing.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, Mayer is such an interesting guy.
He is. Didn't he have an ego problem for a while or something?
I've seen
an interview where he said
I think most musicians do have an ego
true.
Problem. Him, I'd say so.
Mm.
I don't know. He's a lot of people don't like him, and I kind of get why. Like, to put it bluntly, he can be a bit of a man whore.
Mm, there you go.
But
what's it called? I've never listened to his solo stuff.
He's got some cool stuff.
I've seen him play some blues jams live.
Oh yeah,
he
got a definitely. You know, there's a this thing, the John Mayer Trio, which was just like a straight up blues rock thing, and they have a lot of good stuff. But there's some great Mayer albums. The Continuum is phenomenal.
Which one is that?
That's 2006. That's got like Waiting on the World to Change, Slow Dancing in a Burning Room, Gravity.
Okay.
It's so good.
I've seen what's it called. My friend goes to school up in Minnesota, and they have a lot more house shows up there than we do. And he sent me a video of his friend covering Gravity with like just the reverb on. It's the whole thing is a vibe.
Yeah, Gravity is good. Like my band, the Waterboys, we do that one, and it's just the ending solo. It's just you really go into like these sonic heights with it. It's so cool.
I didn't know. I saw. I don't know if it was a YouTube video or if I read something. I know Eric Clapton said he was a master of the guitar. Mayer was a master of the guitar.
I mean, I would
pretty high
I,
praise.
I would
from,
say so.
Yeah,
I would say so.
Definitely. You know what I didn't realize when I was doing some Wikipedia research the other day? I didn't realize during the working men's studio sessions, and I guess I'm assuming American Beauty, that the Grateful Dead were basically neighbors with Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Well, that's how... Well, there was... Do you know the deal that happened? Why they got those good harmonies?
No, how?
It was simple. So, I guess Crosby, Stills, and Nash, they were working on the album Deja Vu, and they had the song Teach Your Children, and they wanted Jerry to play pedal steel.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So the deal was Jerry would play pedal steel on it, which he did, and it sounds great, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash would teach him how to harmonize.
Mm, there you go.
So that's how
a
they, that's why those albums, the harmonies are just insane.
And I do love the pedal steel on, what's that song, Teach Your Children?
Yeah.
That's a good job with it.
Jerry playing pedal steel, so underrated.
I wish he did it more often. I love it on Direwolf.
Yeah.
On the studio version, it sounds so good.
There's something, he busted it out in 1987 when they were doing the Dylan and the Dead tour.
Really, was he playing it then?
At for like a song or two, he would. And I saw the video. I'm like, wow, that's so cool.
What's it called? We got a pretty good Bob Dylan collection in the big room over here.
I love Bob Dylan.
I know. They're like they're old vinyls, too. What's it called? They have like Bringing It Back Home.
Ooh.
I'm pretty sure we have Blonde on Blonde. All sorts of stuff.
His
older stuff.
Yeah, those albums, like that three-album run, Bring It All Back Home, Highway 61, and Blonde on Blonde. So good.
It's crazy people didn't like the electric sound
back
then.
I know. And you listen to it now, it's like, it still holds up.
Oh, definitely.
Especially, you know, that whole Highway 61 album is
definitely.
Just, it's so...
It could come out today and still be groundbreaking,
I think. It's such a good, solid album.
Was the band still playing with him on Blonde on Blonde, or did they leave after
I don't know. I don't even know if, like, they were, like, the full, like, studio one, too.
Or just,
I know,
like, backing
they were just, like, I know they were playing live. They had, like, a bunch of different studio guys. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I got to check about that. But I thought there was like a 1966 tour that was Bob Dylan and the band.
I think that's when they were playing. Because what's it called? Because Bringing It Back Home is Bob Dylan and the band. I don't think Highway 51 is.
I don't know. Because Bring It All Back Home, that's an interesting one. Because that's like the hybrid one. Like first half electric. And I love the acoustic second half.
Oh, B-side is so good.
Really
it's
good,
insane.
Man.
What's it called? There's one song. It's like I'm Only Bleeding or something like that.
It's all
that
right,
might be
Ma.
My favorite Bob Dylan song of all time.
That's a good one. What else is on there? I know Tambourine Man, It's All Over Now, Baby Blue, one of my favorites.
What's it called? I heard that song. I heard It's All Right, Mom, I'm Only Bleeding when I watched Easy Rider for the first time. A great movie.
I need to watch that.
It's really good. The music is the best part. The soundtrack is the best part.
I think there's a scene from The Sopranos with It's All Right, Mom, Only Bleeding in it. Yeah, it showed up on my YouTube the other day.
Are you a Sopranos fan? Or?
I mean, I've seen bits of it. My parents both watched it, you know, when it was on. I do need to watch it.
I watched it over COVID. It was one of the many TV shows I didn't watch. And I have two friends who are just obsessed with it. They're always talking about Gabagool and, you know,
Gabagool.
All sorts of stuff.
Somebody made a supercut on YouTube. It's like The Sopranos, but only Gabagool. And I'm watching it.
Isn't it like 40 seconds long, too? They only say it like three times.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like four. Yeah, because there's two versions. There's the original and then the extended. The fact that I know this off the top of my head is concerning.
No, what's it called? It's a good show. It's just, you know, it's basically Goodfellas, but set 30 years later.
Gotcha.
Still good. Gotcha. What's it called? You're a fan of the Birds at all?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, no, I found out we have, like, pretty much every
Birds
record.
They're really good.
Definitely.
They've got some awesome songs. What's that one I like? Oh, yeah, My Back Pages. Bob Dylan wrote it. And
he wrote
a lot of
the songs they covered.
For sure.
Songs.
Definitely, yeah, My Back Pages, that's such a good one.
Because I think they recorded Tambourine Man before Dylan released it.
That was like their big debut single, I think, right?
I think so. They played with a 12-string on that, too.
Yeah, well, that was their big thing, like the 12-string. I think it was like, I don't know if it was a Rickenbacker.
I think it was a Rickenbacker. I watched a documentary on it.
Like, I can picture it here, but yeah, it gave him such a very distinct sound. Yeah.
We have every Birds. I was doing some research in the big room the other day. We have every Birds vinyl.
Really?
Except Sweetheart of the Rodeo, because I think someone stole it.
I mean, makes sense. I mean, I would personally steal the Notorious Bird Brothers. That's a cool one. But
I was playing it yesterday,
but
actually.
I do understand stealing Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
I own that on vinyl. I found it in a record store.
Oh,
and
cool.
Paid a little more than I wanted to for it, but
I mean, I think for that album it's worth it.
Oh, definitely.
For that one, for sure.
What's it called? Do you know Graham Parsons? You ever heard of him before?
Yeah.
No, I used to be a big Graham Parsons fan. He's who got me into country rock and everything.
Cool. Yeah. Because he died young too, right?
Yeah, he did.
He wasn't 27, was he? Or was he
I don't
older,
think he
younger?
I don't even think he was 27. I think he was like 25 or something.
See, that to me is crazy when you see musicians who die younger than 27.
I know. It's crazy. Even like today, I mean, like Juice WRLD was like, what, 22?
Something like that, yeah. Who else has died like under 27? Who was the La Bamba guy? Oh, wait, was that... Richie Valens, the guy who died in the plane crash with Buddy Holly. I think he was only like 17, really? 18.
Was Buddy Holly 27 or was he younger?
He might have been. I don't know,
he
actually.
He looked young. I mean, he had a baby face, but he looked young.
He was very young. Let me check about that. How old was Buddy Holly? I'm gonna freaking look up Buddy Holly, and Weezer is gonna come up. He was 22.
Yeah, he was young. That's crazy. He was just tall. That's why he looked older.
Oh yeah.
That's crazy. 22.
I know.
Died in a plane crash. That's sad.
The day the music died.
What's it called? I went through a Buddy Holly phase.
Yeah.
Just what's it called?
Yeah, I mean he's
rockabilly stuff.
Rockabilly stuff is really cool.
Oh, I like rockabilly. Like, what's it called? I went through a little rockabilly phase, like Elvis.
Nice.
Who else? I can't even think of the names.
And Carl Perkins.
Carl Perkins, that was number two.
He's really good.
He wrote Blue Suede Shoes, right? Mm-hmm. That was his song.
Yeah, that's his.
Good for him. That's crazy. He has another, Matchbox.
Oh,
Matchbox,
yeah.
By Carl Perkins.
That's a good
and
one.
The Beatles cover is good, too.
Now, George Harrison, like, I know Carl Perkins was, like, his favorite guitarist.
Really?
Something like that. Like, I know if you listen to, like, George's solos in, like, the early days, you can hear the rockabilly in it.
Really?
It feels like, you know, it feels like Perkins playing it.
What's it called? All Things Must Pass. One of my favorite albums of all time.
You know, I was, like, thinking about that album the other night and kind of, you know, how do we evaluate Beatles' solo careers?
Mm.
And I always say that's the best album by any former Beatle.
I agree.
So
I think the only one that comes close is Imagine by John Lennon. And I hated that. I didn't hate.
Be honest. I don't even think that's the best John Lennon solo album.
Really? What do you think is then?
John Lennon Plastic Ono Band.
That's true.
The 1970. Because that album.
That's like experimental, isn't it?
That, it's very stripped down. Mm. It's...
Or is it stripped down?
It's deep, man. Because that's, you know, because it was just him, like, playing with, like, kind of like a trio for most of it anyway. Because,
really?
Like, he was, like, going through some sort of, like, therapy or whatever.
Okay, what year was that? Was that 69, 70?
I want to say, like, late 1970.
Okay. I like What's It Called, Imagine, because there's two songs I like off of it. Being Imagine.
What else is on Imagine? That's one.
There's, like, Crippled Inside. That's a good song.
Right.
And what else is there? There's a good slide guitar on that song.
Ooh, nice.
And then I think Working Class Hero or something like that is on that song. That one always gets me hyped up.
That's a good one. That's a really good one.
No, but All Things Must Pass, if you listen to it top to bottom,
it's so good.
Best song.
Really phenomenal.
I think he wrote most of those songs when he was with the Beatles and just kind of scrapped
them. Yeah, he was like kind of, he had been piecing it together since like 1966.
Yeah. And you know, I think he recorded that with a backing band that would essentially become Derek and the Dominoes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He had all these musicians and all the guys for Derek and the Dominoes were working on the album.
Yeah.
And specifically, it was, I think, like those those record three Apple jams that like brought that group together and thus Derek and the Dominoes was born. I'm really glad you mentioned that.
I know. I love that combination. Have you ever heard of Delaney and Bonnie?
Yeah, I have.
They're often forgotten in the history of rock and roll. We have a couple other records back there.
Really?
Or a couple, what's her name? Bonnie Bramlett? Is that her last name?
Yeah, I think it's Bramlett.
Some of her solo albums from like the 80s, but
yeah.
What's it called? I think they're great. I mean, they taught Eric Clapton how to sing, George how to play the slide guitar.
Yeah, George's slide guitar, man. Such a really cool sound.
And actually, I think Delaney and Bonnie went on tour with the Dead.
Really?
There was one tour the Dead went on with a whole bunch of other artists. It must have been 1969. It's when they were on that train.
Was it Festival Express? Is that what it was?
I think that's what it was.
Because I've heard of it, but I don't really know much about it.
They just took a train and they went across. It was a Canadian tour, which is why it gets forgotten. And they would have, like, they just had a whole bunch of train cards, and it would be, like, Janis Joplin in one, the Dead in the other.
Yeah, that sounds so cool.
I know. I'm sure you can imagine what went on inside.
Oh, my God. All the drugs.
You must have had to seen it to believe it. It's crazy. And what's it called? I watched a little bit of the documentary. I had to pirate it because I couldn't. I probably shouldn't incriminate myself.
That's fine. You're not the first person to pirate
something. I don't think the FCC will crack down on me for it.
Yeah.
But there's like a scene of Jerry Garcia. I don't know if he's drunk or who knows what. He's telling Janis Joplin how much. He's like, "You're the only woman I ever loved."
Man.
You can tell he got caught simping a little bit. It was funny.
Damn, in 4K. Good job, Jerry.
That must have been a crazy tour, though.
I'm sure. Because I know... Well, Janis Joplin and Pigpen, they would, like, drink a lot and get absolutely hammered.
That's what Pigpen did best.
I mean,
played the organ and drank. Janis Joplin sang and drank.
Yeah. There you go. And both more 27 Club.
Exactly. Yeah, it's too bad.
It's going to be a recurring theme on this show. It all comes back to the 27 Club.
It's crazy how, like, I guess most of it, because what's it called? Janis Joplin died in 1970, and so did Jim Morrison and Hendrix, right?
Yeah, it was a crazy year. Pigpen was 73. Brian Jones from the Stones was 69. Those are like the big ones.
That must have been a terrible 2-year stretch for music.
I know.
Obviously, some great music came out.
Definitely 1970. That had to be tough. A couple of, like, those deaths, the Beatles breaking up, too.
I know, yeah.
Like, that would just be sheer insanity.
It kind of led way for what I think would be, like, you know, the Rolling Stones kind of saved it with some good albums.
True. Well, but they were on the come up already with, you know, Beggar's Banquet and Let It Bleed.
And with Sticky Fingers, was that 71 or
71? 71. Such a good album.
What's it called? I know we were talking about Graham Parsons.
Yeah.
I know he sat in for a lot of sessions on Exile on Main Street when they were in there.
Because I know there's some, like, country-ish tunes on Exile.
Yeah, like Sweet Virginia. Torn and Frayed has got a nice lamp steel in it.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
For a while, that was my favorite album of all time.
Really?
I was a big Exile on Main Street fan.
Like, I like that album. I appreciate it. It's not my favorite Stones one, though. I don't know why.
It's just not... I don't want to say it's not, like, a coherent from top to bottom. It's just kind of this... It's almost like a compilation of just, like, Americana music.
You know, double albums are so weird to evaluate, because it'll always be, like, half of it's great, half of it is all right. Like, I was... What was the album I was thinking about the other night? The Beatles' White Album.
Ooh.
Which is it's a very interesting one.
I did have that on vinyl.
It's got some really great songs, but some absolute duds on there.
I know, and there's, what's it called? There are some songs that are like a minute 30 long, which is, you know, a cool concept.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, they edited everything to kind of siege into each other. It's interesting.
I like some of the experimental stuff. I mean, I guess you can call Helter Skelter experimental for the time.
Yeah, I like Helter Skelter too. That one certainly holds up.
Revolution 9 might be my favorite song off of it. Is that the longer one?
You're saying Revolution 9 is your favorite song off the White?
Maybe not. It's the most fascinating song.
It is certainly the most interesting and strangest. Yeah. We'll put it that way.
I don't know. Because I had never listened to it until I'd got it on vinyl, because I just had never thought, like, Revolution 1 is what I'm going to listen to on Spotify.
Yeah.
I figured it was just like a crappy remix of it. And then I was listening to it on vinyl and I put it on and I was just like, what is this?
It's something. We'll put it that way.
There's one song, my favorite side, I think it's the B-side of the first vinyl, and that's like Rocky Raccoon.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Is Bungalow Bill on that?
No, that's the A-side.
Is that a different album? No.
No, that's the A-side of the first disc, which is probably one of the best sides they may have ever done. Just look at the songs on there. I mean, Back in the USSR, Dear Prudence, Glass Onion, Obla Dee, Obla Da, While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
That is on the A side. I forgot about that one.
Happiness Is a Warm Gun doesn't get the love it deserves. The arrangement on that one is so cool.
I think, what's it called, Back in the USSR might be the best start to a Beatles album.
Yeah.
I say that and Sgt. Pepper's comes to mind, but...
I mean, Sgt. Pepper's, I mean, that is a good opener, just like that guitar intro, the way it comes thundering in.
I know. I'm not a huge Sgt. Pepper's guy, I'll be honest with you.
I'm not either, and I think my problem with Sgt. Pepper's is that it feels very in the era.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
No,
like,
I know exactly
you listen to Revolver or Abbey Road, and, you know, it still holds up.
Yeah.
But you can listen to Sgt. Pepper, and you're like, oh, this is the Summer of Love.
60s album.
I mean, there are a lot of good songs in there. I mean, it's got A Day in the Life, arguably, like, the best Beatles song they ever did. So it's still a very, very great album. Had a huge impact, but, yeah, I'd be...
It just didn't age as well as the other albums.
It didn't age as well. Like, you know, and for years it was hailed as, like, the best Beatles one. But then kind of opinion shifted towards Revolver.
I've never given Revolver a chance. I haven't been able to.
Here's what I will say about Revolver. Revolver just is revolutionary.
Okay.
1966, and they had all sorts of styles on there, you know. There was certainly some psychedelic influence in there, but it wasn't, like, overtly psychedelic like Sgt. Pepper's
was. Kind
of,
like, subtle a little bit.
It's just the things they do on there. Like, every song is different from each other.
When did they start smoking weed with Bob Dylan? Because I've heard that story before, that Bob Dylan.
I don't know, maybe.
Was it 60? It must have been 65, 64.
I would have to say the second half of 1965, just because listen to Rubber Soul and they'll be like, yeah, that makes sense.
I think, because everyone calls that, like, the Beatles, like, weed album or something
Rubber Soul is so good. That's, like, the first truly great Beatles album.
I always get that one confused with, what are some songs off of that one?
That's got Drive My Car, In My Life.
Rock and Roll Music isn't on that one. That's one of the earlier ones.
No, that's Beatles for Sale.
Beatles for Sale, okay.
But What else is on there that's like nowhere man? Mm. Norwegian Wood is on there.
Okay, I thought that was an album for some reason, but no, that's a song off of. What's it called?
But Rubber Soul is a really good listen. Mm. And a lot of people group like Rubber Soul and Revolver together because that was kind of like a 1-2 punch of like, we're artists now. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, that's when they kind of come into their artistic phase. But they're not like mature. I would say the White Album is the first mature Beatles.
I don't know. I feel like Rubber Soul.
Really?
Is,
I think it start, goes back to Rubber Soul.
I think it starts at Rubber Soul. Mm. Certainly. Well, just having In My Life on there makes a pretty good argument.
What's
for it,
called?
It.
I will say I had never listened to the Abbey Road B-side in its entirety until I got it on vinyl. And then I did and just put it on one day and my mind was blown.
Here's what I will say. So I would say Abbey Road is my favorite album of all time. Mm. As much of the praise that Side B gets, Side A
is still
holy
great.
Crap.
Side A is still great.
I mean, just the sequence on there, just everything there, it's so good.
And what's it called? I was sick of Come Together because...
Same here.
What's it called? Where I work, it's always on like the classic rock radio.
Geez.
And I was like, okay, I'm done with it.
Yeah, I was sick with it for a while too.
But then I listened to it on vinyl and it kind of revitalized it for me.
Yeah, it became revitalized for me because my band started playing it, and I was like, "All right, I'll give this one, you know, another chance." It's always a good opener, you know.
For sure. So. What's it called? What are your thoughts on Octopus's Garden?
I love that song.
I love it too. I think it's
great. It's just such a fun vibe. I love the guitar on it because it feels like it sounds like Jerry playing.
It does,
doesn't
kind of? Yeah.
Just, it's so cool. I love that song. Just
what's it called?
The way it's composed.
I know some people who hate that song. That's George. I'm obviously George playing guitar, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever watch that? I never watched it. The Disney Plus documentary.
Disney Plus.
It's a
documentary.
Let It Be. It's a Let It Be documentary.
Oh,
and
that one.
All the footage.
I do need to watch that one.
What's
I do need
called?
To watch.
There's
it.
Just a lot. Yeah. A lot of things to watch. I don't really want to sit down and.
Same here. There's a lot I need to watch too. Yeah. But Abbey Road in general is an album that really kind of like public debate on like best Beatles album these days seems to be between Revolver and Abbey Road. Because Abbey Road, it does so, you know, it does so many different genres, but it feels cohesive.
It does.
I always think of Abbey Road as their last album.
Let It Be is Let not it, one of my favorites.
Let It Be is weird.
There's some good songs
on
it,
yeah,
I think.
Like the song Let It Be has always been
Definitely.
One of my favorites, and there's great songs like I've Got a Feeling is so good.
Oh, that's good. That's a really good one.
I don't know. I don't think of it as the last one.
No.
For me,
it's almost like a compilation. They just threw something together. And
because like when I think of like order Beatles albums, like White Album, Let It Be, Abbey Road.
Mm. Do you know who I don't think has a good solo album? And I haven't listened to a whole lot of his discography. Paul McCartney.
Really?
I can't identify a solo album that...
Well, are we including Wings in this?
We're including Wings.
Band on the Run is a pretty good album. There's some good songs on
there. I don't think
it
measures up to, like, you know, All Things Must Pass.
Well, I don't think anything really
can.
That
is true. Nothing can, but...
It's interesting, though. I would say, of Beatles' solo careers, Paul McCartney's probably had the best career. Just because, he's been doing his thing for 50 years, and he's still an icon. Lennon had the best song with Imagine. George had the best album with All Things Must Pass.
I always think George is the best musician. What's it called? Paul is the best celebrity.
Yeah.
And then John was the best, I guess, icon, for lack of
a
better term.
John,
just 'cause he kinda
John Lennon was
politics.
Such an interesting guy.
He was. What's it called? Have you seen, I don't mean to get too dark, but have you seen that album cover? Or something.
Oh, yeah.
His glasses after he got shot.
Yes, mm-hmm. I have seen that. It's like, whoa.
I know.
It's really, really crazy to look at.
Definitely not her best decision, I think.
No.
Maybe not.
You want to know the weirdest thing about when John Lennon died, when they pronounced him dead in the hospital in like December 1980? Mm-hmm. By sheer coincidence or some other weird higher power, over the hospital, like, radio loudspeaker, All My Loving by the Beatles came
really?
On.
Really? That is crazy.
That is really crazy.
What are the odds?
It's just nuts.
Dude, it's one of those things that just outerwardly, you know, you just kind of have to accept
exactly.
it and embrace it. What's it called? Did you ever read Catcher the Rye in high school?
I did.
Yeah, because didn't the guy who shot John Lennon, he was like reading Catcher the Rye and he had it in his pocket?
I don't know.
That's what my My English teacher made a big deal out of it, and she made us watch like an interview of the guy who shot John Lennon to some point about Catcher in the Rye. And I was like, this
How does this affect the way I think about the book?
Exactly. It was definitely strange.
What I think was like the saddest thing about Lennon's death was that, you know, he had taken like a 5-year hiatus from music, and like 1980 he was coming back. Like him and Yoko put an album out in November, and you know, things were looking up for him, and then dead.
Have you seen the
he was only 40,
yeah, he was
which
young.
Was nuts.
1980, I mean,
yeah,
imagine if he lived until today. Mm-hmm. If he was still alive today, it'd be crazy.
And it was like, and it was a huge shock too. Like, I remember my parents telling me about it, because like, it was like a Monday night, and it was during like Monday Night Football or whatever.
Yeah,
like the announcer, you can like look up the video of like the announcers like saying it, and it was just, you know, you felt the ripples of it. Like, wow.
I mean, when you think of assassinations in like the second half of 20th century, you think JFK.
Oh yeah,
John Lennon. I mean,
JFK assassination. That's definitely one I've thought about, because, you know, being in my journalism class right now, I've thought a lot about Walter Cronkite. And if you find the video of like Cronkite announcing that Kennedy was pronounced dead, you could like see him like fighting back, like the tears in a way. Yeah, it's really moving.
That's crazy, because I took a history class on Kennedy, or not a history class on Kennedy. I took a history class in high school, and we talked a lot about Kennedy.
Kennedy is a very interesting
when you examine his presidency from like a political perspective. I don't want to say anything overly controversial. You could argue that he wasn't the best technical president, but he was still this icon. I mean, he was this young guy.
Like, in terms of like a candidate, Kennedy is like the ideal guy.
Oh yeah, he represented
young, charismatic. Yeah, he was. His presidency was weird because, you know, you had Bay of Pigs that failed.
Exactly, that's kind of the biggest stain on his career.
But I mean, we did navigate, you know, through the Cuban Missile Crisis. So that was, I'll give him that.
I don't think it's fair to say you can blame him for Vietnam, but he definitely
Vietnam had been going on since the Truman administration.
Okay, so,
and from what I've read, he was like kind of reluctant, and he really just kind of pushed it off.
Yeah,
and then, you know, once he died, it was Johnson's
LBJ
problem.
I was gonna say it was LBJ.
LBJ really escalated it.
LBJ's a character.
He is a really interesting guy.
It's too bad that he like mishandled Vietnam.
I know.
I don't want to say he was a good president, but he did a lot
Here's what I'll say. In terms of domestic policy, LBJ, phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he did a lot of great things, like civil rights, Voting Rights Act, Great Society. But then he tried to, you know, balance, you know, domestic and foreign, and just...
And just tanked. Shit's so bad, unfortunately.
So bad.
And then you have Nixon, the greatest president of all time after that. That was sarcasm.
I know. Yeah, you look at Nixon's like, bro. Nixon's also really weird to evaluate because he did like some good things, like, you know, kind of ushered in that period of detente with like the Cold War and stuff. Started the EPA. Nobody mentions that he was the one.
What does that stand for? EPA, is that
that's an Environmental Protection Agency.
So we did that.
But I don't.
The only problem was Watergate.
That and trying to use a prior restraint against the New York Times and Washington Post for publishing the Pentagon Papers.
I don't know. As crazy as the time we're living in right now is, imagine being alive from like 1960 to 1970.
My God.
It's just, you have so much
going on.
Just
like going from like all the people, like Vietnam, the 1968 protests.
Like just the musical progression, culture.
And also like things like Altamont, and then Watergate.
Exactly.
Just, oh my God.
Even like living from 68 through 71, those years must have been crazy.
Oh yeah, really the whole kind of like mid-60s to like mid-60s through like, I don't know. I don't know when it ends. I guess maybe mid-70s, but even that, though, I don't know.
Well, then you have the recession in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
You know? It's like it just...
and hostages. It never ends.
And then you have Reagan in the 80s.
Oh, my God. Well, really, kind of the entire progression of our society today really goes back to, like, Kennedy.
I think
Kennedy presidency.
I think...
Like, if you really want to, like, start, like, where, like, kind of modern America, it all goes back.
It's
really
Kennedy, yeah.
Really, everything is kind of a... everything goes back to Kennedy getting assassinated.
Yeah.
I think you could probably trace like an entire progression.
I don't know, because I feel like,
I don't know.
Obviously World War II
Well, that was
sucked and everything. But like coming out of that, you know, we had the economic recession, and you know, I don't want to say things were going good in America, but for some people,
yeah,
you know, people kind of had this illusion that America was
better,
you know, indestructible.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Kennedy gets shot, I feel like it's just a reality check for so many people, whether that be socially, musically.
Mm-hmm. And it was huge.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of coincided too, because like a couple months after Kennedy was shot, guess who played on the Ed Sullivan Show?
Yeah, the Beatles.
And really, if you want, like, kind of, I will stand by that as probably like the most important moment in music history. That and the release of Smells Like Teen Spirit are
that
probably
too.
The two biggest things in
Do
music.
You think it's fair to say that two most important or even greatest musical artists of all time, Beatles, Nirvana, or vice versa?
See,
is that fair?
The problem is I don't know if I want to put Nirvana that high, but in terms of impact, they are certainly up there. Because I know we had talked about this, like Teen Spirit changed everything, but the Beatles changed everything because like ushered in the British invasion and all these British bands, you know, started becoming popular in America. And then, you know, they were, you know, the Beatles, they were like writing their own songs and pushing the boundaries, and a lot of other people started doing that. So, you know, that was really huge.
Yeah. One band I've been listening to a lot recently, an artist too, is The Velvet Underground and Lou Reed.
I love Lou Reed.
I am a big Velvet Underground fan, big Lou Reed fan.
Lou Reed is such a cool guy.
Have you seen his interviews from like Australia?
I don't think so.
I'd look him up on YouTube. He's just such a interesting guy. He's screwing with the interviewers the whole time.
He's really cool.
Have you listened to any like the Velvet Underground stuff?
I've listened to a couple albums, like the first one.
Yeah, that's a good
I think I've listened to like all four except for this. I haven't listened to the second one, like the White Heat.
Yeah, White Light, White Heat.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that one.
That one's interesting.
That's
I
what
would
I
call
hear.
It one of my favorites. My favorite is their third album, their second self-titled. I have that one on vinyl.
That one's
really
cool. Because what's the one on there? Pale Blue Eyes
Pale Blue
or something?
Eyes is a very good song.
That's what I hear.
My brother actually introduced that song to me after I'd been a Velvet Underground fan, but I kind of had been opposed to that album because I was like, I like the noise rock and the angrier stuff.
I mean, certainly those first two albums, you know, very edgy. Certainly the first one, too.
Oh, yeah, very, very edgy.
Great, great songs on there.
Do you think that's the birth of alternative music?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think so, too.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Velvet Underground certainly, you know, really spearheaded that just in the sound and the aesthetic.
Especially aesthetic, too.
Big time aesthetic. Yeah. So I would say absolutely. It goes back to them.
It's weird how Lou Reed's solo career is quite strange.
Very interesting. Yeah. There's some good stuff. Like what's the 1989 album? New York. That's a cool album.
What are your thoughts on his Metallica album, that Lulu album? That's finally on Spotify now.
God.
I was listening to it.
I've never actually listened to it, but from reviews I've read on the internet, both Lou Reed and Metallica fans Metallica fans hate it, and Lou Reed fans are like, what was he doing here?
I think that was his last
project. Yeah.
He died in 2004.
Some around then.
I think.
And I'm pretty sure he was on Long Island when he died. I think he was in Southampton or something.
Yeah,
he had a house there.
Because he lived in New York for most of his life, just the state and the city.
Yeah. So he was... And Southampton is very far from me. That's only
a
couple towns over. Yeah.
What's it called? Have you ever heard of Metal Machine Music?
I've heard of it. I know we have the vinyl of it in here. You've listened to it?
We were listening to it the other day, me and some of my coworkers.
And what was the consensus?
We loved it. We were dancing to it. You know, you have to embrace it. You can't.
So, like, what? It's just like a noise rock thing or just noise? What?
It's literally just like white noise. I don't know how he did it. I think he did it with a guitar and an amplifier. I don't know how exactly. I don't know the science behind it. But it's just, I think it's like a proto, like white noise metal.
Probably.
Just noise rock music.
I would say so.
Yeah. And that pressing is interesting because it's like an original pressing. And it got taken off of like the market 2 weeks after it released because everyone hated it.
Oh man, that's tough.
We could probably sell it for like $40, you know?
Yeah,
an expensive vinyl. So
I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'll have to I'll listen to that one and let you know what I think.
Yeah, for sure.
How do you dance to it is what I want to know. If it's
that is a good question.
You just kind of make your own beat.
Exactly. You just kind of, you know.
Insert
beat here.
It's
like improv, just freestyle. What's it called? We found,
Oh, man.
Are you a Talking Heads fan? I feel like.
Yes.
Yes. We found,
Big time.
I didn't even, I was looking in the wrong section for Talking Heads albums. We found Speaking in Tongues.
Nice.
And so we were dancing to that, too. That one's a fun one to dance
to. That is a very... Talking Heads, in general, is fun to dance to.
No, they're the best.
So one of the albums that I, you know, grew up on, you know, when I was younger, was Stop Making Sense, the live album.
Oh, yes. I love
so
that
good.
One. Really
like,
good
I love the version. Like, there's a great version of Slippery People on there. Life During Wartime.
Oh,
what
that
a
video?
Song.
Have
the
you video. Seen that video?
Yes.
Because that's it's technically, is it technically a movie soundtrack? Because it's a live album, but
yeah,
I think it
technically,
was a movie
technically,
originally.
Yes, because there is a movie, and I remember being younger, watching that, I'm like, what is this? Who is this guy running on stage?
A friend of mine was an English major. I mean, I'm an English major, too, but for some class she took, she had to watch that movie.
Oh, really?
I was like, you're so lucky.
Interesting.
Like, sounds like a dream class.
Cool.
I like the Take Me to the River song.
Ooh, that's a good
that
one.
That one's good. It's a little bluesy,
a little
folky.
Yeah, Talking Heads in general are just cool. David Byrne, such an icon. He's still doing his thing. Like, he's got his Broadway show, American
really?
Utopia. Yeah, from what I hear, that's it's an experience.
Okay, interesting. You know Brian Eno? Are you a Brian
yes.
Eno fan? Yeah.
Do you know the album Another Green World by Brian Eno?
I know one Brian Eno solo album, and it's like Here Comes the Warm Jets or something like
that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
like
one
of the early
ones.
This
yeah.
is like a cross between like his first two kind of like glam rocky albums
okay.
and like the ambient stuff.
Okay.
This album, it's so cool. Yeah. Another Green World.
What,
really.
What year did it come out?
75, I want to say.
Okay, so.
It's
Another Green World, it's called?
Yeah. It's,
I'll add that
it's,
to my
That's
my
a fun
list.
One. And all sorts of people are on. I know Robert Fripp from King Crimson shows up.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
He's a character. He's an interesting guy.
Eno's produced everyone.
Eno has.
Because he worked with Bowie in the Berlin trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of which, I finally listened to the B-side of Low. It was quite the experience.
Yeah, man. You'll hear that and be like, wow.
No, because
it just makes you think.
We were, me and my roommates were cleaning our apartment because crazy week last week. You know,
oh,
we had to, you know, we kind of were slacking on keeping it tidy. And so I was like, oh, look, I'll put on some music, put on the B-side. And we all kind of just sat in silence and were like, what? Like, what are we
listening
to?
It's interesting, you know.
I think we're good. They might... Oh, I'm meeting with these guys for a podcast, so we might have to wrap it up.
That's all good. I got to get to class soon anyway.
We got like 50 minutes worth of content.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
good.
Wow, this was a really wide-ranging discussion today. From Dead & Co, final tour, to talking about presidencies and Brian Eno.